on your Wi-Fi radio,
on your iPhone. Commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio,
your favorite talk station.
You're listening to Trouble Teen Help with Dory Francis, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and good afternoon. This is Dory Francis, your host of Trouble Teen Help. Well, that tells you how my morning's been going. I am really pleased today to have back with us Dr. Andy Sapp, who is the founder of Cherry Gulch School for Boys in Idaho. Andy's been with us before, and we had lots of requests to bring him back. Andy's going to be talking today about boys, their needs, and how an experiential therapeutic environment can help. He is the founder and president of Cherry Gulch and has extensive experience in working with children and adolescents, as well in the fields of mental health and psychology. Trouble Teen Help is here every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time on LA Talk Radio, and we bring you varied guests each week to talk about what's going on in the industry of assisting teens and their families. And Andy, I'd like to say hi and welcome and glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back again.
It's great. So how's the weather there in Idaho?
It's cold, but warmer than usual.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's going to affect our Olympics up there if they don't start getting some snow. So for those who did not get to listen to the show that we had last time, if you could maybe give a little bit more background on how you started, and especially talking about a little bit on your therapeutic wilderness experiences, and then maybe briefly recap our last interview about boys' development and the problems that they're facing, and then we'll take off on some new subjects for our listeners today.
Great. Yeah, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, and I've worked at a variety of different places, juvenile detention centers, locked inpatient psychiatric hospitals, where I was the lead clinician for the adolescent unit, and also worked in the pediatric unit. I spent several years at a therapeutic outdoor wilderness program, and you know, 3.5 years working at group homes for foster boys as a therapist, and at an elementary school, and 2 community clinics, and spent a little time in the Navy, and a residency as well. So then I started Cherry Gulch, which has just been amazing and wonderful, and we've seen so much progress in the boys here, and that's really been my baby. That's where my passion lies, and we'll get into that a little bit on kind of why I'm so interested in working with this particular age group. We work with mostly 10 to 14-year-old boys. But so what we talked about last time, and I'll try not to go over the same material because there's lots and lots of it that we can talk about, but just you know, the challenges that children face today, and particularly those of boys, and how many of the boys are hurt and confused, and you know, the challenges that they come up against. We also looked at how the middle school years is a period of great change. In fact, the only period that has more change than this is infancy. And then how testosterone levels increase by 8%, and how the brain is still developing, and the colossus isthmus, which is a specific area of the corpus callosum, increases by about 80% in this kind of age range as well, and how 10 to 13-year-olds are really kind of the most self-conscious group, and then 12 to 14-year-old boys have lower self-esteem than both those of older and younger peers, and a lot of that is due to the changes that are occurring around puberty and things. So that's basically where we left off.
Yes, and for those who would like to go back and hear that again, the mind, moods, motivation, and maturity of the middle school male and their brain development is what we talked about last time. And you can find all of the archives on latalkradio.com as well as on troubledteenhelp.com. And you can also find a link to Cherry Gulch School on there as well to take a look at their wonderful website and their pictures and learn more about their program. So for today's topic, Andy, would you please explain to our listeners, you know, just why early intervention as well as prevention is important?
Yeah, so the early intervention and prevention is really important, partly just because there's so many boys out there that are struggling and hurting, and, you know, for every football star, there's more who, you know, boys who are in juvenile halls and high school dropouts and teenage alcoholics and addicts and things. And although I like to talk about early intervention and prevention, at Cherry Gulch, you know, we started about age 10, and so that's really not even early intervention, but it's certainly much earlier than waiting till a student's 17 and a half and, you know, you have 6 months left until they can walk out of the program that's there to help them. So I really appreciate the families that we work with, but it's also important to realize that, you know, it's not like they just start having troubles and come to a school like Cherry Gulch. For the most part, these problems have been going on for a long time, and they've tried therapy, they've tried family therapy, individual therapy, they've tried psychiatry, they've tried special classes and special, you know, day schools and things, and it just hasn't worked. And so this is another step which, you know, has a great chance of helping them, because we can help control so many of the different variables and give them a huge team of support that can help get that student to the next level. But also, this early intervention is important because we can kind of stave off future negative events from happening. For instance, children's behavior as early as age 3 can predict whether they will use alcohol or other illicit drugs in adolescence. There's at age 7, there's a coherent kind of syndrome that you can see that's characterized by alienation, impulsivity, and subjective distress that is certainly a precursor to drug use. So as we start seeing these things, we can intervene and get the child back on the right track. And then also, adolescents with higher resiliency in early childhood were also less likely to show signs of sadness, anxiety, aggressiveness, or delinquent behavior. So the opposite is true, too. If we can help them to be more resilient, we can help them to start communicating more effectively, then that can decrease the problems that they'll have. So,
the ages that you work with there at Cherry Gulch, would you remind our listeners again? You're working with the younger mm-hmm. population, and having that, you know, intervention, so to speak, you know, when needed at that early age can really make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, if you look at some of the other disorders, like, for instance, conduct disorder, we don't really work with conduct disorder, but we do work with oppositional defiant disorder, and oftentimes the ODD will turn into conduct disorder, and then if it's not treated appropriately, it'll eventually turn into an antisocial personality disorder, which is, you know, obviously quite serious. So the symptoms before age 10 place a child at greatest risk for the antisocial personality disorder as an adult. And then the younger the age of the first offense, the higher the risk for recidivism. So they looked at all sorts of different things, and they found that, geez, you know, the first negative offense kind of associated with legal action is more likely to lead to more and more crimes than even the severity of the crime and things like that. And then intervention is most effective when it targets pre-adolescence rather than adolescence. There, again, looking at the importance of that early intervention. And then also intervention is most effective when they include family intervention. And that's one of the components to, you know, pretty much any therapeutic program, residential therapeutic program at least.
So
that's why I think it's so important.
It is important, and that family component, as you mentioned, is extremely important in the process, whether, you know, you're working with a 9-year-old or you're working with an 18-year-old. I think that aspect of what Cherry Gulch does and what, you know, a lot of the programs do, is tremendously beneficial in not only for the student who's there in treatment, but for the family who's at home and also needing to take a look at some of the things that were going on there, because this just really isn't just all about the child. I think in many aspects, you know, the family dynamics play a role in them getting to the point of where they're calling you and taking that step. So, you know, Andy, what can boys do to improve their odds of being emotionally healthy and successful in their lives? Because it just sounds like they are really, really struggling, and that you're seeing more and more, you know, of the young boys having difficulties. And I know that that's an area that you like and specialize in working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that's really important is just to have a caring adult that is there for you, to support you, that believes in you. You know, that can make a huge difference as far as resiliency to problems. Also, really basic things can help so much. Just learning how to appropriately express your thoughts and feelings, and kind of learning this feelings vocabulary, learning some coping skills, some social skills, some anger management skills, increasing that frustration tolerance, finding some things that will give a boy some value in his own mind and the other boy's value, and kind of think is cool. That's really cool that you're good at BMXing, or you're good at science, or whatever it is. So those are things that can really help boys, and really can help any kids. Even there's studies showing, like, if you spend 5 days or if you have dinner together as a family at least 5 days a week, that is a resiliency factor. If you have a father who goes to PTA and is involved in the school, that shows that those kids are more likely to get better grades, because it's showing that dad cares about those things. So there's a lot of important pieces for boys, and then we'll get into in a bit some of the experiential pieces that are super important. I wanted to go back just the fact, though, that say by age 9, most boys have learned to repress all their primary feelings except for anger, because, you know, anger is kind of coming from this source of strength, at least in a boy's mind, where, you know, being angry and aggressive and things, that's socially acceptable. But crying or being depressed or sad or anxious and things like that, those are vulnerable kind of feelings, and they feel like they might be not necessarily physically attacked, but emotionally attacked by other boys, and be called a sissy and things if they're showing these other feelings. So they start to bottle it up, and that leads to more problems. You can also see that, just by the fact of growing up, adolescents experience positive situations as less pleasurable than adults do. So if you go to, you know, someplace fun and do this great activity, the adults will probably rate it as more fun even than the adolescents, which is kind of counterintuitive. But then there's other research to support that, because between 5th and 7th grade, the reports of feeling very happy drops by 50%.
It's that middle school syndrome. That's such a hard age.
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard, and that's something I have to do with our families, because they're like, well, you know, Johnny says that he's not doing anything and it's boring, and I'm thinking, And we went whitewater rafting, we went snowboarding, we, you know, did all these really cool activities. He just didn't tell you about it. And so yeah, they just, those things don't, are not as fun for them as it would be for someone older. And then also the evidence points to early adolescence as the critical time in terms of emergence and development of emotional, psychological, and behavior problems. And oftentimes, boys, they don't even know how they're feeling. They can't really identify their emotions. So just by helping them with that will help a boy a lot. Also, you know, helping a boy to self-disclose, which is basically, you know, the opposite of repression. If you're going to lead to greater grief, sadness, rage, and fear, and also extreme behaviors. So if you're, the less you self-disclose, the more suicidal behavior increases. And the lack of self-disclosure, so self-disclosure also is linked to like psychiatric illnesses, neuroticism, anxiety, aggression, and other things. And then some of the studies have shown that loneliness and lack of communication have been described as the basis of adolescent suicidal behavior. And if you're looking at the suicide rates, it's really scary. Over the past 20 years, the greatest rise in suicide rates have been for 10 to 14-year-olds. Not that they commit suicide the most, but the increase has been very clearly for 10 to 14-year-olds, and certainly boys commit suicide much more frequently than girls. The next level up would be from 15 to 19. That's the next level that's increased the most. So the epidemiological data suggests that the transition to adolescence represents a critical developmental vulnerability period for increased suicidal behavior. And in the U.S., the third leading cause of death for adolescents is suicide, and this rate increases sixfold during the transition from childhood to adolescence. So you can see I've got my hands full with these 10 to 14-year-olds.
You bet. And you know, for our listeners, I do want to remind them, if you have a question for Dr. Sapp today, you may call in during the show at 1-323-203-0815. Don't be embarrassed to call in. He'd love to answer your questions. Let's talk a little bit about therapeutic schools and residential treatment programs and outdoor programs and how they can really help when a boy gets off track.
Great. Yeah. Well, one of the things that helps so much is really just being able to control the variables. I mean, you don't have to go into a therapist's office a week later after some blow up happened at school and try to rehash it. We can intervene right in the moment if something challenging happens, and so that's great to kind of have what we call the milieu, the environment of the school that is working towards the betterment of these boys. Also, it's wonderful to have a peer group that you're working with, and so we have student leaders that are kind of mentoring one another, and that can be a very powerful factor. And then we have all these experiential activities as well, the equine-assisted psychotherapy, the therapeutic games and initiatives, you know, going to, as a group, whitewater rafting where you have to all paddle at the same time, or, you know, it may be dangerous if you don't work together.
Right.
Working towards these, yeah, I mean, that kind of makes a boy want to work more as a team to kind of reach the superordinate goal, which is, the research shows that's the best way of bringing feeding groups together is through superordinate goals, something that one person can't accomplish alone. But also just it doesn't seem as much like therapy, although we do 10 to 14 hours of therapy a week of various types here. But, you know, working with horses and things that the boys don't even really necessarily think of this as therapy, so it's much more engaging and interesting to them. And then we can get, you know, going from the experience they had with the horse into, you know, how that might be similar to experience they had at home or at school, or have they ever felt like they think that horse is feeling now. Those things can be really excellent ways of kind of engaging a student. We can be out shooting hoops or hiking or grooming an animal or working in the garden or doing things like that while we're talking, which, you know, makes it seem less threatening, more interesting. It allows us to draw on the natural world around us. And whether it's a storm rolling in, and as we're talking about a storm that's coming up within the boy's life. So those are ways that it can be very, very helpful. And then also just through the consistency that our staff can have, through the ability to work with the parents and eventually give the program away, because we're teaching mom and dad how to do this at home. And although with our boys, some of them are very challenging and may have had 8 different diagnoses before coming to Cherry Gulch, by the time we get them kind of back on the right, and all of the things that we have now, like Vygotsky talks about, as a developmental psychologist, talks about this developmental scaffolding. So we're putting all this structure in place to help work with each boy's specific needs. And so there's a lot of really powerful work that we can do just by having such a big team working together in this experiential, interesting environment that's been developed just for kind of this age group with these types of issues.
Yes, I know when I was up there visiting you and visiting my student who's with you, you were doing some work with the horses, and it was interesting. You know, if I recall correctly, the boys were in different groups, and they each were working with a different horse and had to kind of get them to go from one end of the corral to the other, which sounds easy, but there were a few little obstacles, nothing major in the way. And, you know, as I was watching them, you know, a lot you could see where first they'd get angry and then they'd get frustrated and then they'd want to give up. And then, and you were asking them, were these some of the things that they were experiencing, you know, with mom and dad at home? And it was like the light went on. Oh, yeah. So, you know, in them learning in those ways and in that type of therapy, which isn't like therapy for them, it is incredibly beneficial. Do you have some other examples that you could share about how you work with the boys there at Cherry Gulch?
Yeah. So one of the groups that we do every week is called, we call it initiatives. And so just a quick example of what that might look like. And they're all different ones that we use. But one example is one called the spider web, which some of the listeners have probably have done at a corporate retreat or elsewhere. But that one, we just go down to the park and we weave these ropes between two trees, and that's a spider web. And so the boys have to all work together to, like, pick up another boy and get them through that web without getting tangled in the web, without touching the web. Otherwise, that piece of the web closes up and they have to use a different one. And so it's a strategy to get through. Now, some of the things with a newer group of students, we would design some activities that will be relatively easy and fun, and so they can do that team building and work together cooperatively and start celebrating their success. Other times, there might be a group that has been around longer, or for some reason we decide that we want to really kind of test their frustration tolerance a little bit, so we'll choose an activity that's more challenging, that's likely to get the boys to really start to bicker a little bit, and then we can help them push through that and work through that and gain mastery over their own emotions, and we can remind them of some of the coping skills and things they're learning during individual therapy. But also, as you're doing that, after it's finished, your boys are kind of, you know, they're excited because they were successful at it, if that's the case, and then they're talking about, you know, how was it for them? It was easy or it was hard? And you know, did you get tangled up in it at all? Well, no, I didn't, or yes, I did. And then you can talk about, well, what are some things that ensnare you or entangle you in your life back at home or school or in your community? And so then they might say, well, you know, for me, I have really bad temper tantrums or anger problems with my mom or my dad or my teachers. And so we can start to work at those issues out, all discussing it as a group and having the boys kind of helping each other with it. So that becomes kind of a fun activity that's really, in some ways, it's an icebreaker, but then it leads into a lot deeper work than we would have got if we were doing kind of that traditional armchair therapy.
Absolutely. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard from kids throughout the years that they are just done with that type of therapy by the time that the family is calling me or calling you, sitting in an office somewhere, staring out a window. They just check out and they really are not wanting to engage in with somebody in that way. Not to say that traditional therapy is not wonderful. I don't want to get bombarded with calls and emails because it really does have its place. I think it just gets to a point where they need something different that's more interactive. Especially boys who just tend to have all that hyperactivity, they just do really well when they're actually engaged in something. And I think that's why the outdoor programs help as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when we have students graduate, we strongly encourage their families to make sure that they are attending weekly therapy sessions back at home. So I've certainly been a believer of therapy in a variety of situations, but we're also talking about students that have not benefited, or at least not benefited enough from more traditional forms of therapy. And here at Cherry Gulch, if I did, say, 14 hours of just one-on-one office-type therapy, I would probably drive the kids nuts.
I'd be gone.
They drive me nuts.
Yeah.
So that's why we try to make a little bit more fun and hands-on and experiential. And we do that with the academics as well. I talked a lot about academics last time, so I won't this time, but just the things we're doing, like the first LEGO Robotics League and the Team America Rocketry Challenge and building a shed with their math teacher, kind of using those angles and calculations and building little hot air balloons. And we were actually state champions in 2008 and 2009 in chess and placed second this year. And so lots of different fun things that are going to improve logic and reasoning and help them see how that applies to their life. And then the same with the therapy piece, you know, there's like some of you have heard of trust falls and things. We have a student walk up this small staircase and fall backwards in the arms of his group or his parents, and like we do that sometimes with our family workshops. So there's lots of ways to kind of relate to the world in a more active, hands-on way where it's okay to be active, and that's great for these boys that I work with ADHD or short attention spans and things like that, to be able to keep it active and engaging.
Absolutely. And, you know, Andy, I'd really like for you to share with our listeners more about Cherry Gulch and the model of change that you use. I know we talked about that a little bit last time, and we've talked about that some more today, but I really want to, you know, give you that opportunity because what you're doing is working. I've seen great results with the young student that I've had there. I know from others that they've seen great results. And so, you know, the model of change that you're using really is working for these younger boys. And I'd like for you to share with our listeners about how you go about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've really kind of formed Cherry Gulch around relevant recent research. And so there's some areas of research that just isn't very fleshed out, and we've had to kind of adapt it and modify it. And then others that we put our own spin on it just because we think that it'll be more effective to have it be more hands-on than, say, a certain study showed. But the number one thing that we do, and that's this thing, which is building relationships, is really the number one things that I think that most of the quality schools and programs do. So we're wanting to build a relationship with the student. And to me, you have to also kind of hold that line of having boundaries and having setting the consequences when a student's acting out. Because if I just kind of let him act out and I don't put any structure in place there, then he's going to be constantly testing those boundaries and acting out more and more to kind of find out where are those boundaries, what can I get away with, and if he can just kind of verbally push you around and there's no consequence for that and you don't stand up to him in that way, then they lose respect for you as well. So So part of that relationship building, of course, is to go do these fun things, the whitewater rafting or snowboarding or horseback riding, whatever it may be for that particular weekend, that you're building relationships through those fun times. You're also building those relationships through helping the boy when he's sad or upset. But by setting those limits and, you know, allowing for the consequences to take place, then you're making it so you can develop an even deeper relationship with the student, because now there's not as many blow-ups. He's not as oppositional. He's more willing to listen, and so that tends to foster a stronger and better relationship. Another aspect that we're putting in place is all of this different therapy, the, you know, 10 to 14 hours or more of therapy, plus psychiatry, you know, the individual group, family, specialized psychology groups, a number of different community meetings, the equine-assisted psychotherapy, the initiatives, all of that stuff is helping as part of a therapeutic support system with a supportive group of people. And then on top of that, we have like what I call the positive peer leadership program, which some of the programs for older teens and things will use a positive peer culture, which is great for certain groups of teens. For our students, they're just a little too mature, in my opinion, for that, the ones that we work with. So we want to continue to foster that, though, through a student council, through a mentoring kind of group where boys that have been here longer can mentor the younger ones, the newer ones, and also through giving like support as far as these group activities and having the boys learn to work together and trying to be helpful rather than hurtful. And then through our RAC chips, random acts of kindness that we're giving out to students when they do nice things for staff or their parents or for each other. And then another level is this positive parenting plan that we use, where so there's a list of rules for the school that we all follow. There's chores, there's a family meeting, and by that I mean a school meeting where they can resolve grievances and problem solving and things like that. So that includes like tokens that they get for doing well during the school day and doing well in the after school hours. They can earn these RAC chips, the random acts of kindness, that will help them become student of the week or student of the month, and three of those equals another token. And so those things they use to go snowboarding with. So if we're going snowboarding or some other activity, the lift ticket is, say, $40, they'd have to pay 20 tokens. So we're trying to put all this scaffolding in place, all this structure, so that these boys can reach a height higher than they could have reached on their own. And so that's another piece of the program. And then going and doing all these activities, you know, a lot of them are educational, like banding migratory birds or scanning endangered squirrels or touring fish hatcheries or observatories. And so boys are going out and they're seeing other things that they're interested in, and that we're trying to help them find their strengths and their competencies and something that they're good at. But they're also becoming motivated because, you know, even if they want to, say, be, you know, open. I had one boy that wanted to open a ski resort. Well, there's a lot that goes into that. You love skiing, so that's great. That's a good start for opening a ski resort. But now you've got to learn the academics of how to run the ski resort, to balance the books, to, you know, develop your marketing materials, all these things. So we're trying to relate it back to their academics so that they're motivated to continue on in school. And regardless of whether they switch their major 7 times as a freshman in college, like most freshmen do, it doesn't matter, because we're helping them with those fundamentals there, those building blocks. And so then there's more doors open for them to choose from. With say, the animals here, that's a good way to kind of help start to form attachments and things, and to teach responsibility, because you're caring for another living being. It's also just really interesting for a lot of the boys that we work with from the city to be able to come out and remove some of the distractions of all the, you know, computer addiction and technology and things that can be detrimental to them. So we kind of look at ourselves as a high-tech ranch-style environment where we have smart boards, we have computers. They're used in kind of limited amounts and for academic purposes. So we don't have kids just watching TV all the time and playing video games and things like that. These kids are very active, and with that structure, There's research that shows that for depression, say, you want to keep active, you want to have a structured schedule, it's important to get your heart rate up. So the exercise through judo and soccer and hiking and all these things that we do are very beneficial in that way. Plus, say, for like our judo club and things, you're learning to have better body control and positioning. You're getting stronger. You're swimming down and feeling better about yourself. You're learning it's okay to get banged up a little bit, and it doesn't mean you need to lose your temper because you're going to need to stay in control of your emotions to do well in judo. And so all of these things that we're doing are planned and purposeful and lead to kind of improving the outcomes of our students.
Well, you do a lot of activities, you know, while you're there. That's absolutely true. I think it's nonstop, and I got tired just being there for the day and watching. So. but those boys definitely have that high energy that keeps them going. And we've got about 5 minutes left in the show, Andy. You know, one of the things I know that I've had parents ask about before, and especially when they're calling, is you do work with the younger kids, and it's tough enough when a parent calls, you know, with a 17-year-old and they're looking to get assistance, but when they're calling, you know, about their 9 or 10-year-old, that's a really hard step for them to take. And I was hoping that you could just share with some of our parents who are listening today briefly about how they stay connected and involved in the process with their son while he's there.
Oh, absolutely. And that family component is huge for any program that wants good outcomes. I mean, the research shows the generalizability of what they learn at school, or meaning the therapeutic program, is going to be much greater at home if the parents are involved. So like I said, we want to do lots of different parent training pieces so that the parents learn how to do what we're doing and can implement that at home and continue on the success that their son's feeling here. So they'll, in short order, they get like several phone calls a week with their son, and they get another hour phone call with their son's primary therapist, where oftentimes their son is pulled into that phone call as well, so we can do some family therapy on the phone. We just got done with a 3-day family workshop this past Saturday. We do those at least once a quarter, and so we're teaching a lot of really good things, but we're also doing some bonding exercises and helping the families build positive memories, because a lot of times there was family conflict before their sons were enrolled in Cherry Gulch, so we have to kind of work to undo some of that. And then we're also all along is teaching each part of kind of how they can implement what we're doing back home, and then they can write as many letters as they want and things like that as well. At our school, we offer more home visits than a lot of programs do, just because our boys are younger and we want to get them home. We know that they're going to be going back home. It's not like they're going from here off to college, and so it's really important for us to use that as a time to see how well their son's doing at home, and to bring that back to those family therapy sessions as well, so we can work on the treatment plan and help the family be more successful together at home. And within 30 days, it typically is the first visit, and then on-campus visit, then we, as little as another week, they could have an on or off-campus local visit, and as little as another week, an off-campus overnight visit going to Sun Valley or Boise or wherever. And then after that, they can move up to start having 3 to 5 day home visits, and then it gets progressively longer until their 14-day plus home visits. And once they earn one level of visit, then they can continue to have that level of visit until their son moves up, unless, of course, it's just becoming like a detriment, and this is enough, I get to go home for 3 days now, so I'm not motivated anymore, then we might talk with the family about looking at a different strategy. So not that they would be going home every single opportunity that they have, because we don't want them to be gone half the month every month either, because that's not going to lead to the best outcomes for their son. But we want to kind of slow that process down a little bit, so we can help them in these family therapy sessions and observations on campus, and build the trust of their son and also start building the trust of the parents so that we can work together to intervene to try to help the family identify what they can do differently to be more effective. Or, you know, we have a lot of great parents we work with, but the boys have some special needs as well, so we need to figure out what they need in particular to help them be more successful and then teach that to the families. So there's a whole strong component of this parent piece that we do to ensure that these families are going to continue to be successful once they get home, or I should say rather increase the odds of that, because certainly through adolescence there's going to be bumps in the road, but we want to make the parents feel confident and feel like they have new skills to be able to address some of these challenges and give the students the coping skills and resources as well so that they can handle a variety of different challenges throughout their life and end up being more successful, healthy people.
Well, I've really enjoyed having you be with us again today, Dr. Sapp. I know that we've got you scheduled to come back again because parents really are interested in the information that you're sharing about boys. And before we end the show, I want to make sure that parents know how to reach you. So if you could let them know where to find your website and your phone number, that would be great.
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah, our school is called Cherry Gulch, and so is our website. It's cherrygulch.org, cherry like the fruit and gulch like a small valley, G-U-L-C-H, cherrygulch.org. And our phone number is 208-365-3437, and my extension is 502, 208-365-3437, extension 502.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I know that there's still so much more information for you to share. I'm really looking forward to having you back again. To all of our listeners today, please, if you have an opportunity to listen to both shows now that Dr. Sapp has done and you've got an adolescent boy, it's very informative and a lot of information can be gain from listening to those shows. And you can find the archives for those shows on latalkradio.com and also on troubledteenhelp.com. Andy, enjoy the beautiful scenery there in Idaho. I'm going to enjoy the beautiful scenery here in Bend, Oregon. And to all of our listeners, wherever you may be, welcome to the rest of your life. May you have a good day.